Jenna Udenberg is with me via phone on the radio. Jenna has been a contributor before to our station with many different, I think several different avenues. Jenna, thanks so much. This is a new one. You're an author now. So thanks for coming and for being here. And let's see, I don't just hardly know where to start except to say that as an author myself, I notice that you're a very well-organized book launcher and you have a really good system to get your book out. I know that's like the number one thing is how to get the word out once you have a book and you have a gem to share with people. So good work with that. And I hope the launch has been going well.
Yeah, thanks. A great contributor to all this is I've been working with Self-Publishing School as a part of my Bush Fellowship
the last couple of years.
And so it was more of a training program and, you know, how to write, how to launch, all of that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's been a huge learning curve. So trying to put the writer's hat on an author versus columnist with Local View from 4 Foot Two from Lake County Press. So
right.
Interesting pulling all the stories together and not having a word limit or
right.
Those biweekly deadlines. But, yeah, it's been quite the adventure of learning those skill sets and increasing other skill sets, but then also just digging deep into my story and letting my story even change and add new perspectives of what current life looks like for me.
Right. Well, I know when you write a book, you cannot stay the same throughout. I mean, there's something about getting it out on paper that does sort of make reflection essential and change as well. And so did all this start when you got that Bush Fellowship years ago? That was the beginning of this as well.
Yeah, in some ways. I mean, ever since being a child, everybody would joke around that I really need to write a book. And sometimes it was in jest, and other times it was in sincerity of just, you know, that my life has had many different adventures, becoming disabled at age 7, and, you know, how the world has changed. And that was before Americans with Disabilities Act had even passed. So seeing all of the different ways that life has changed for the disability community and culture is just amazing. And then I would say definitely the 2020 Bush Fellowship helped provide the resources and the funding to, you know, make this dream more of a reality. And then also, you know, throughout that fellowship, getting to know more about other disability advocates and activists and understanding the history and the things that I'm able to do today as a disabled woman that I wouldn't have been able to do, say I was born back in 1978 instead of, you know, being disabled in 1988.
Right.
And so just a lot of growth and a lot of learning and also a lot of humility and respect and honoring of those people that have gone before me, and also inspiring to say, what is my life supposed to do? What is my story supposed to impact? Who is it supposed to impact? So that way life for these young people who find themselves with disabilities and even older people who are finding themselves with disabilities, how can that story impact and make changes that are lifelong, so that way life is easier and better and more inclusive for everyone.
Yeah. Now, just for listeners that may not have never have heard from you before, do you want to just share, like, what is the basics of your story?
So Reader's Digest version.
Yeah.
I am born and raised in Two Harbors, and at age 7, I was diagnosed with juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, is what they called it at the time. Went through, you know, scary life changes, was in a wheelchair by age 8, which
wow.
To a kid, you just don't really understand all of it. But in the medical world, they're like, wow, that was really aggressive. And that was a really fast acting disabling condition, and was kind of a medical guinea pig for many years and decades, just because, you know, it was a newer thing. And that's when Lyme's disease was also on the scene to begin with. So lots of testing down at Mayo Clinic to make sure that my diagnosis was correct.
Huh.
And then by age 16, I thank my parents so much because they gave me the opportunity to make some of those life-changing decisions, because ever since childhood, we were encouraged by physical therapists that once you start making the surgical decisions, you'll never stop making surgical decisions. So I was glad that I was able to wait until age 16 to start making those life changes. But since age 16, I believe I'd had like 17 or 18 surgeries.
Wow.
So I have 6 total joint replacements. I've been in multiple different rehab situations and, you know, found my own voice, learned how to advocate within the medical system, made relationships with my providers that are kind of like a medical family to me now. And so my whole book is based on the premise of that our life creates a tapestry, and how every relationship that we build, whether it's just somebody you're talking to on the street, or somebody that's your nearest and dearest friend, or one of your family members that are loved ones, that it doesn't matter the amount of time or the depth that somebody has in your life, but our tapestry is made up of every single person that comes into our life. And they're all important, because if they weren't there, there'd be a hole in your tapestry.
Hmm. I love your focus on the relationships, because that really is, in some ways, you know, the key to everything. And that, and it seems like you have found this sort of extraordinary path of being a purposeful, useful, engaged person, and you have this disability that you are not only constantly dealing with, but that you are working to improve situations for yourself and everybody sort of as you're doing it. So, and then this book is part of it. I'll just say the title, Within My Spokes, A Tapestry of Pain, Growth, and Freedom. How did you come up with the title?
Actually, I worked with a great friend of mine who does lots of trail adventures, and actually is one of my former teachers. And her and I have been doing lots of fire flying out on the trails, my electric third wheel attachment. So she actually helped me find the name of Local View from 4'2". And I'm like, hey, if that worked, would you help me wordsmith
yeah.
out the title? So finding something that embraced who I am, that hinted at disability, because it's like, I'm proud to say that I'm a disabled female who has a life story within culture, even though I primarily live within the non-disabled culture in the locations and regions in which we live. But finding that self-identity, and yet also causes some mystery, but also acknowledging that, you know, all of us have pain, all of us have places that we've found healing in our lives, and that's not the end of the story. It's not a pity story. It's not a, oh, I'm so inspirational because I use a wheelchair. You know, there
Even
are
if you
just
are.
Some of those things that are out there, and I just want to break through that, because that's not what we as a disability community are looking for.
Yeah.
We just want to be able to live our life and share our story, and we want to hear everybody else's story, and we want to, you know, live a life that's fulfilling and engaging, and understanding that we all inspire each other. And it's not just being inspired to have that ooey gooey feeling inside.
Yeah.
It's that being inspired to make change, to become an ally, to realize that there are things in life that we all have control over, and we can change to make better and be more inclusive.
Yeah. Yep. And so that leads me to sort of a two-part question, is how have things changed throughout your adult life as far as access to for people with disabilities? And now I kind of forget the way I've worded this question in my mind, but just how that relates to you and your life personally now. I mean, like you said, it's been several decades now of pretty significant legislative change. You know, how has that found its way into everyday life here on the North Shore?
Yeah, great question. I would say that so much has changed, right? Because technology has changed,
yeah.
Attitudes have changed, the right stakeholders, the right elected officials, the right ability to just have conversations around difficult topics.
Yeah.
Even though that's a really hard statement to say in some of our current climates in our society.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look back at that trend within the last several decades, I would say when I think back to childhood, the only place that I could ever have friends over, the only place that things could happen in a social setting was always at my parents' house.
Mm-hmm.
And I've shared that a little bit in Local View from 4'2". But now, when I see other young people that are wheelchair users, because that's, you know, my disability and my wheelhouse, pun intended, that, you know, they can go to the local hotels for birthday parties. There are pool lifts in some of, you know, the hotels and resorts. There's, you know, if your family's able to travel to, you know, down in Texas and other places where they have fully accessible water parks and, you know, so like the whole world is embracing more of it, and yet we still have so much farther to go. And part of my research as a Bush Fellow and connections to other disability advocates has really given me the words of, it's not about being ADA compliant, it's about being ADA committed. Because the whole point of the Americans with Disability Act is to be within the spirit of that law. It's not just a box of check marks, because if you do just the check marks, you might be making a space that you think is accessible and inclusive, but it's all the things between those check marks that make a space welcoming and truly accessible and universally designed so it can meet the needs of people the most. And having that attitude in business owners, in everyday people that are, you know, working those jobs, that are in the hospitality industry, that are in the local business world, that are in elected officials and in local leadership, you know, that their eyes have been opened and they say, well, right, we want Jenna to be able to go here or there. We want Susie to be able to go here and there. We want Bob to be able to see, you know, these concerts or these part of the North Shore or, you know, what have you.
Right.
Yes. And then, like I said earlier, with my Firefly really opening up the whole world of being out on the trails and being back out in creation and nature and creating all of these amazing connections with other people. Like, it's amazing to me when I hop on a trail with a friend, the complete different culture that the biking community has. I don't ever see as many people look me in the eye or say hello or have a good day or any of those pleasantries. And they're looking right in my eyes. But if I wheel down a sidewalk, you might get a hi out of every 10 people. Or you might get, you know, something. But it's never that same connection that the trail life and biking community have. And so making those possibilities, you know, seeing the DNR providing track chairs at 13 new, state parks now. And Split Rock is going to be included in that in August. I mean, just huge opportunities that, you know, are happening locally and then all the way up to the state and the federal government is amazing. And now it's just like, yes, we need to keep continuing that and making sure that accessibility is a part of all diversity, equity, and inclusion conversations, because that is such a huge topic and lots of training and all of that. But what we're noticing within disability community is that that word is being left out. And a lot of times when we challenge that, we say, where is this? And they're like, oh, well, of course it's in diversity. Well, it might be, but it's like a few sentences. Or it's implied, but it's never called out.
Yeah.
And so disability affects 24% of all American population. I believe in the state of Minnesota, 13% of our population identifies as disabled. And so therefore, we know that if it's something that somebody is trying to identify with, that those numbers are even larger, because not everyone wants to identify, you know, with that label or what have you. And the other cool thing about disability culture and community is that everyone is welcomed into it at any moment, whether it's a disease, an accident, you know, what have you. And so the disability minority is the most diverse community that we have, and yet we're often the most marginalized and ignored. And so that all is just mind-blowing to me, and yet it's been so freeing to have those statistics and that data and that language, that shared vocabulary, where we can come together and have those hard conversations but good conversations and leave inspired to take that next step of what does this look like, feel like, sound like, and act like in all the different areas of life.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I have gained from your column is learning about, like, a lot of what leaving your house means to you that it doesn't mean to me is just the prep. Like, you just have to always sort of look ahead and see, is this place going to have a bathroom? Is this going to place, will I be able to get to this place? And if I get there, where will I be able to park? And what, blah, 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 blah. You know, just sort of this always sort of being on top of it thing that I'm that people of not disabilities we so take for granted. And I think of particularly of wilderness areas and how, like, I'm so glad to hear you saying that those really have opened up in recent years. And here's kind of a, I don't know if it's a hard question or, like, you're saying we need to have those difficult conversations, which I so appreciate. And I know I was talking with a friend who is disabled recently about a certain wilderness area, and he was actually saying, like, he was just wondering, where is the line? Because at some point he felt like creating an accessibility in a certain wilderness spot was, for one, well, I mean, just a lot of sort of infrastructure building, but also he felt that it was, you know, it maybe would help a disabled person very rarely, but that it was also pretty disruptive to the whole wilderness area. And he just wasn't convinced as a disabled person that the balance had been put in the right place there. Do you ever find that kind of challenge, or what do you think about that question of or do you think there's just always a way? Like, there's always a way, so we shouldn't limit the accessibility to certain places because of the concerns of, or just sort of peripheral concerns. Do you know what I'm asking? I feel like I haven't asked it very well.
That's okay. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so, again, I can only speak for myself, and yeah. I guess I would say in conversations that I've had with, you know, different state park managers and different DNR folks and all that, I think it just comes down to, like, a conversation.
Yeah.
Like, are the stakeholders that are really going to be impacted by those spaces and places, are they there from the beginning of the design? And
yeah.
In one of my presentations to the DNR last year, I believe it was, they blew my mind in some of the questions they asked after my presentation. And when I was talking about one of our local lakes that I love to go to, I don't know if he was a biologist or what have you, but he was like, oh, so you mean when we're planning where the public dock goes and where the accessible fishing piers go, we should actually probably look at the ecology of the lake to make sure fish would actually go there?
Oh.
And then I shared about how I always lose my lures and bobbers because so much of where the public docks are is the, you know, different weeds and lily pads and all
right,
of that.
Right, right.
So then I was like, oh, you do have that power, don't you? You could think about where this goes for those needs, because I'm like, I don't want to hurt the environment by going fishing.
Right.
But also, if things aren't thought through in the beginning and maintenance processes, you are causing more impact in a negative way than what we want.
Right. Seems like anyone would always need an actually disabled or wheelchaired person to test everything out as you're doing it. I mean, it just seems like that's
right.
Impossible to not know without that.
And the thing for all of this, whether it's environmental or business or, you know, hospitality, whatever, is that it needs to be at the beginning planning stages, and then not just there, but throughout
right.
the whole process. Because so often it's like, oh, that's right, we have to make things accessible after the fact, after infrastructure is done, after funding is secured,
right.
after you already have everything built, and then they go, oh, we don't want to do that because now we have to retrofit everything. And it's like, right, had you got a hold of us and had us a part of the process from the beginning, we would have saved you a lot of money and heartache and, you know, frustration for everyone. But also getting back to the environmental side of things is, like, I just want people to promote what they have. You know, don't feel guilty about what you don't have. Don't feel guilty about what you know the topography of our region creates. That, like you said, it would be a ginormous fiscal burden. It would be not logical to destroy all of creation to then try to get it back. You know, so I'm just trying to break that barrier again from just my perspective of promote what you have, and then we as disabled people can make the decision if that works for us. But so often when there's not the promotion, we don't know, right? None of us, disabled
right.
or non-disabled, we don't know what we don't know. So I would have never thought that I could be in the biking community. I would have never thought that I could go out on trails. I longingly looked at the bridge north of Iona's Beach every time I drove to Silver Bay to teach.
Yeah.
Like, that looks like the most amazing thing. I'll never be, never is taken out of my vocabulary now because I found something online. I was a Bush Fellow, so I had the resources to buy and purchase the Firefly. And now, you know, the sky is the limit as far as local trails and making connections with the Gitche-Gami Trail Association and them teaching me, like, oh, this part of our trail is old ADA infrastructure. And then, oh, this is newer. So, you know, the Firefly will do better on our newer sections than the older. And I tried the older, and they were really fun. And even though it was a little scary, it was a lot of fun.
I can see you totally have your work cut out for you because, I mean, I'm just thinking if I owned, you know, any, like, a store or anything, like, if I could bring you in and you could look at it and, like, you could see, oh, well, this is a possibility, right, and this is a possibility, or even, like, go to, yeah, whatever, Palisade Head. What are the possibilities here, you know? And I can see that, I mean, what a amazing, not that you would have asked for this disability, but what an amazing life I can see that you have in front of you of really just helping to move this forward in a way that no able-bodied person could do. That's really neat.
Yeah, and so I'm super excited for the nonprofit that I was able to start as well. It's called Above and Beyond With You, capital U, hence all my students used to call me Miss You.
Oh, yeah.
Play on words. And Above and Beyond comes out of, you know, we don't need to only do ADA compliance. We need to go above and beyond and live in the spirit of ADA.
Wonderful. So how can people look this up? Just Above and Beyond?
Yeah, if you just Google Above and Beyond With You, our website is aboveandbeyondwithyou.org. We're on socials, Instagram and Facebook, and also LinkedIn. And so we're new. We're just getting off the ground, but I'm super inspired by my initial board of directors. And so it's amazing. There's just a lot of support and there's a lot of excitement. And so people can learn more about that as well at our my upcoming author talks, Thursday the 27th at Teteh-Gooch, a partnership with Teteh-Gooch and Silver Bay Public Library at Teteh-Gooch, because that's one of my favorite state parks on the shore. And that's from 6:30 to 7:30. And then the following Thursday, August 3rd, from 6 to 7 p.m., I'll be at the Two Harbors Public Library just before the city band concert and simple suppers and all that. So a very cool tie-in for me being a longtime city band member.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and some future author talks that aren't cemented yet, but you'll see that out on social media and our website as things get more solidified. Yeah, so just exciting.
Yep.
And the nonprofit is just, you know, really looking at, you know, our four goals of that we want to be a conduit, that we're increasing awareness, that we're creating accessible and inclusive spaces and places for people to be a part of community. And, you know, we want to start locally, but wherever it goes from there is where it goes. And, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of work ahead, but it's exciting work and it's good work and it's important work.
Well, thank you so much for being with us, Jenna. We are, like, well over time, but I just couldn't stop us. So thanks so much. And I'm sure many listeners will see you at one or the other of your book talks, and we will have you on again as all this develops. So thanks again so much. This has been a pleasure.
Yes, thank you, Katya.
All right. You take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. That was Jenna Unberg, advocate for the disabled in general and owner now of a nonprofit and a new author.